You were the Judas goat.
The wraith shape in the shadows swirled and shifted.
Not at all. That implies that I was betraying the old gods for the new, which was not what we were doing.
Not at all,
whispered Loki.
I can see that. You two weren't betraying either side. You were betraying both sides.
I guess we were at that,
said Wednesday. He sounded pleased with himself.
You wanted a massacre. You needed a blood sacrifice. A sacrifice of gods.
The wind grew stronger. The howl across the cave door became a screech, as if of something immeasurably huge in pain.
And why the hell not? I've been trapped in this damn land for almost 1,200 years. My blood is thin. I'm hungry.
And you two feed on death.
He thought he could see Wednesday, now standing in the shadows. Behind him, through him, were the bars of a cage which held what looked like plastic leprechauns. He was a shape made of darkness, who became more real the more shadow looked away from him, allowed him to take shape in his peripheral vision.
I feed on death that is dedicated to me.
Like my death on the tree?
That was special.
And do you also feed on death?
Asked Shadow, looking at Loki. Loki shook his head wearily.
No, of course not. You feed on chaos.
Loki smiled at that, a brief pain smile, and orange flames danced in his eyes and flickered like burning lace beneath his pale skin.
We couldn't have done it without you,
said Wednesday from the corner of Shadow's eye.
I'd been with so many women.
You needed a son.
Wednesday's ghost voice echoed.
I needed you, my boy. Yes, my own boy. I knew that you had been conceived, but your mother left the country. It took us so long to find you. And when we did find you, you were in prison. We needed to find out what made you tick, what buttons we could press to make you move, who you were.
Loki looked momentarily pleased with himself. Shadow wanted to hit him.
And you had a wife to go back home to. It was unfortunate, not insurmountable.
She was no good for you. You were better off without her.
If it could have been any other way,
said Wednesday, and this time Shadow knew what he meant.
And if she'd had the grace to stay dead, wood and stone were good men. You were going to be allowed to escape when the train crossed the Dakotas.
Where is she?
Loki reached a pale arm and pointed to the back of the cavern.
She went that-a-way,
he said. Then, without warning, he tipped forward, his body collapsing onto the rock floor. Shadow saw what the blanket had hidden from him. The pool of blood, the hole through Loki's back, the fawn raincoat soaked black with blood.
What happened?
Loki said nothing. Shadow did not think he would be saying anything anymore.
Your wife happened to him, my boy,
said Wednesday's distant voice. He had become harder to see, as if he was fading back into the ether.
But the battle will bring him back, as the battle will bring me back for good. I'm a ghost and he's a corpse, but we've still won. The game was rigged.
Rigged games,
said Shadow, remembering,
are the easiest to beat.
There was no answer. Nothing moved in the shadows.
Goodbye, father.
But by then there was no trace of anybody else in the cavern. Nobody at all. Shadow walked back up to the Seven States flag court, but saw nobody and heard nothing but the crack and whip of the flags in the storm wind. There were no people with swords at the 1,000-ton balanced rock, no defenders of the swing-along bridge. He was alone. There was nothing to see. The place was deserted. It was an empty battlefield. No, not deserted. Not exactly. He was just in the wrong place. This was Rock City. It had been a place of awe and worship for thousands of years. Today, the millions of tourists who walked through the gardens and swung their way across the swing-along bridge had the same effect as water turning a million prayer wheels. Reality was thin here. and Shadow knew where the battle must be taking place. With that, he began to walk. He remembered how he had felt on the carousel, tried to feel like that, but in a new moment of time. He remembered turning the Winnebago, shifting it at right angles to everything. He tried to capture that sensation. And then, easily and perfectly, it happened. It was like pushing through a membrane, like plunging up from deep water into air. With one step, he had moved from the tourist path on the mountain to somewhere real. He was backstage. He was still on the top of a mountain. That much remained the same, but it was so much more than that. This mountaintop was the quintessence of place, the heart of things as they were. Compared to it, the lookout mountain he had left was a painting on a backdrop or a papier-mâché model seen on a TV screen, merely a representation of the thing, not the thing itself. This was the true place. The rock walls formed a natural amphitheater. Paths of stone wound around and across it, forming twisty natural bridges that eschered through and across the rock walls. And the sky. The sky was dark. It was lit, and the world beneath it was illuminated by a burning greenish-white streak, brighter than the sun, which forked crazily across the sky from end to end like a white rip in the darkened sky. It was lightning, Shadow realized. Lightning held in one frozen moment that stretched into forever. The light it cast was harsh and unforgiving. It washed out faces, hollowed eyes into dark pits. This was the moment of the storm. The paradigms were shifting. He could feel it. The old world, a world of infinite vastness and illimitable resources and future, was being confronted by something else, a web of energy, of opinions, of gulfs. People believe, thought Shadow. It's what people do. They believe, and then they will not take responsibility for their beliefs. They conjure things and do not trust the conjurations. People populate the darkness with ghosts, with gods, with electrons, with tales. People imagine and people believe, and it is that belief, that rock-solid belief, that makes things happen. The mountaintop was an arena. He saw that immediately. And on each side of the arena, he could see them arrayed. They were too big. Everything was too big in that place. There were old gods in that place, gods with skins the brown of old mushrooms, the pink of chicken flesh, the yellow of autumn leaves. Some were crazy and some were sane. Shadow recognized the old gods. He'd met them already, or he'd met others like them. There were Ifrits and Piskies, giants and dwarfs. He saw the woman he had met in the darkened bedroom in Rhode Island, saw the writhing green snake coils of her hair. He saw Mama G from the carousel, and there was blood on her hands and a smile on her face. He knew them all. He recognized the new ones, too. There was somebody who had to be a railroad baron in an antique suit, his watch chain stretched across his vest. He had the air of one who had seen better days. His forehead twitched. They were the great gray gods of the airplanes, heirs to all the dreams of heavier-than-air travel. There were car gods there, a powerful, serious-faced contingent, with blood on their black gloves and on their chrome teeth, recipients of human sacrifice on a scale undreamed of since the Aztecs. Even they looked uncomfortable. Worlds change. Others had faces of smudged phosphors. They glowed gently, as if they existed in their own light. Shadow felt sorry for them all. There was an arrogance to the new ones. Shadow could see that. But there was also a fear. They were afraid that unless they kept pace with a changing world, unless they remade and redrew and rebuilt the world in their image, their time would already be over. Each side faced the other with bravery. To each side, the opposition were the demons, the monsters, the damned. Shadow could see an initial skirmish had taken place. There was already blood on the rocks. They were readying themselves for the real battle, for the real war. It was now or never, he thought. If he did not move now, it would be too late.
In America, everything goes on forever,
said a voice in the back of his head.
The 1950s lasted for 1,000 years. You have all the time in the world.
Shadow walked in something that was half a stroll, half a controlled stumble into the center of the arena. He could feel eyes on him, eyes and things that were not eyes. He shivered. The buffalo voice said,
"You are doing just fine.